Flock. I'm so glad that Kartik Shaker has agreed to join us for this special bonus segment. If you haven't listened to his interview from this past week, you have to, because he has all the plans in place to change the world completely, including saving all the animals. And he's motivated by animal rights, which, you know, either people either aren't or they aren't willing to admit it. But he is. And I think I'll start off by asking you that. You are entirely open about being motivated by your concern about what we're doing to animals. But sometimes people think that's not going to play. Does it hold you back with certain audiences?
It might, but that's okay. I'd rather abide by how I want to do things versus, you know, debasing myself for what's necessarily just a pure pragmatism. I also think about it in terms of where you get to actually change someone to have a meaningful impact. So I think it's cool to get people to eat like less meat and just to think like alternative foods are cool. But when you get someone to actually really care about animals and to really care about animal suffering and to really like grok the magnitude of these practices, like that's where you get real change. And that's something that I want to continually foster. And then furthermore, I, you know, just want to be a good example, right? So I know veganism is, you know, has all this baggage associated to it. You know, being vegan can often be a pejorative, but I want to change that. I want to set a good example for my friends, my peers, my family, and just, you know, be a great example so that they can develop better sensibilities about veganism.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think people often undervalue how much impact they can have. People just talk about, well, the number of animals I'm saving is just, it's either a drop in the bucket or given the economies of scale, it won't even make any difference if I go vegan. It's not going to change the marketing level of different. That's not the right way to think of it. It's influence, and people do influence each other. We are primates. That's how we do. We look at each other and imitate, and hope, I'm sure some people are doing that with you, with your very positive veganism. So the ideas you're talking about, I hope, are in the not too distant future, but they're definitely not tomorrow. So what are the best possible ways to get there sooner that we can do right now?
I think one, just being a good example and just being, you know, a really cherished, you know, peer, role model, family member goes a long way. So inviting the non-vegans over for dinner and, you know, just being very gracious about it. I am really motivated by tipping point theory. And I think it actually offers a lot of way to think about, you know, this movement. So in my view, the transition to a world free of animal technology, it is inevitable, right? So I've argued that there are compelling technological reasons we'll do this, but it's also going to be for social reasons too. You know, just as we've developed increasing sensibilities about different genders, about different races, about, you know, sexualities, about religions, we're going to do the same, you know, with anti-speciesism. We're going to realize that, you know, these are the right values to adopt. And so if we understand that we're going to get to that point at some point, then we have to see it as like, how do we get there sooner? And like, how do we shift the curve, as I like to say? So shifting the curve is tremendously impactful. I just want to take a side to talk about this. So if you imagine that there's 70 billion animals slaughtered per year, and you shift the curve by 1 hour, so, you know, you get it, you know, to 1 hour earlier that we've transitioned away, that means you've saved 8 million animals. That's absolutely incredible. And so that means, you know, you host these dinner parties, you shift it by maybe a few seconds, that's still thousands of animals. Like, that's still very impactful. I think one of the biggest ways to get to this tipping point and to get to this transition to occurring is with institutional advocacy. I think institutions tend to be very concerned with the winds of you know, how people think and, you know, social mores. So we saw this during the Me Too movement, where an organization such as the Golden Globes, clearly did not act fast enough after George Floyd and after the Me Too movement. And, you know, they paid dearly for it. You know, effectively the show, you know, is completely off of the air and, you know, no longer occurs in the same sort of capacity that it did before. And so getting institutions, I think, to adopt more vegan practices, so I think getting them to pledge reducing animal products and eventually getting towards zero, I think it's going to be, the biggest leaps in the shifting of the curve.
Yeah, that's real. I mean, that makes really a lot of sense. And obviously, that is hugely important advocacy, even small institutions and large, but of course, even better, the large institutions. And we have seen, you mentioned the Golden Globe, so I immediately thought of the Academy Awards, the fact that they had, probably due largely to Joaquin Phoenix, the fact that they have vegan options at the dinners, or I think one of them was even totally vegan. That is huge. The impact of that can be huge. And I particularly like the way you put it, that they have to be scared about keeping up with mores. It's not just that you need to convince them to do the right thing. You have to convince them that people will think they're bad and that will hurt them. I don't know how to do that exactly, but I think we are getting closer. We're definitely getting closer. You know, one of the issues I didn't talk to you about, well, it's a combination issue. It's both land use and human population growth. It seems like the land use issues here, I mean, though you do have to feed stuff into these bioreactors to create food. And presumably you would still be growing some food. I don't know how far we are in the future. But the amount of land you would have to use for agriculture, I mean, but even beyond the fact that you're reducing to zero the amount of animal agriculture, which is by far the largest land use, would mean that there would be unbelievable savings in land use and potential that would have climate potential. And also, this is sort of a related issue. I don't know whether I should ask it together or not. Does human population growth just become a non-issue if we're producing food in new ways? Because the big problem with human population growth is making sure people don't starve.
Great questions. So yes, regarding the land use tidbit, so indeed, animal agriculture capitalizes an extensive amount of land. I've seen estimates around a third of the ice-free land on planet Earth is being used to rear animals or to grow the food to feed the animals. And you're absolutely right that this has climate change implications. And this is unfortunately something that people miss when thinking about what's deleterious toward climate change. We think a lot about emissions, but we don't think a lot about the other side of the equation. So this is the Earth's ability to actually draw back in the CO2 that's been released into our atmosphere. And absolutely, if we free up the land by replacing the animal agriculture, we get the double benefit. We get the benefit of reducing the direct emissions caused by animal agriculture. And then we free up a ton of land that we can repurpose, perhaps regrowing trees, we can revitalize the Amazon, and we can just start drawing back the CO2. And from the numbers that I've seen, this is actually like one of the easiest and most potent interventions toward climate change. Like, we don't need like breakthroughs in like clean energy or batteries or solar or anything like that. We just have to get animal agriculture down to zero and revitalize forests, and that's going to be enough. And to your second question about population growth, so from what I've seen, we're supposed to plateau in terms of population at about 12 billion people per year, or maybe just a little bit less than that. I forget what our current estimates are right now, but I think it's like 8 or 9 billion people. I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that. I'm just going off the cuff here. And yes, so and so to your point, like yes, we can basically just have a steady state where we have this steady state of 12 billion people because people are basically only having as many kids to basically replace the population, and we can basically grow as much food as we need to feed that steady state population, and we would have a completely sustainable food system.
Yeah, no. I'm not particularly in favor of 12 billion people, but I'd much rather have 12 billion people that we can feed without destroying the entire planet than 12 billion people who are living on a planet that is not sustainable and which we're destroying because we're taking up every square inch of it to raise food, but including animal food. I mean, certainly that is a nightmare scenario. I don't even know how people are imagining that that's possible. So this has been great, Kartik. I'm really excited. There's not too many people who come on who talk about how the world's going to get so much better. Most everybody's pretty scared about how the world's getting so much worse. So it's really been fun. Thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you so much, Marianne, for having me. It's been great.